Good afternoon, evening, ladies and gentlemen. And today I've actually got one of my very best wine duo tastings of 2025. It's pretty solid, you know. And here we have two Bordeaux chateaus. One is Fonzac, not very well known, but we're talking Right Bank, Grand Vin de Bordeaux, Chateau d'Alem, 2020. So this is going to be an exciting moment, to be fair. This is 14.5%, right? It's a solid Merlot. The vineyard of the Chateau d'Alem was founded in 1610. It is located on a high hill close to Saint-Emilion and Pomerol, and well oriented to the south. The wine is elegant with silky tannins and a fully aromatic complexity. It can be enjoyed now or many years later from the beginning to the end of the meal. Brigitte Roulier. And you can buy this yourself through the Imprimeur at Laithwaite Wine. Okay, that's where I get it, and I would definitely get another. So I pre-order a case of 12, maybe a year ahead, and I put down a deposit, and then when they arrive I pay the full, but I don't have to pay all the taxes and excise until I take delivery, and I can keep the wine stored for years actually in Laithwaite's own a storage facility, which does mean that you're not going to be drinking it before you think it's ready. So, you know, it's very, very difficult, massive learning curve. You know, how much of a drinking window do these chateaus have, and do they vary from vintage to vintage? And of course, there's no known answers at all. You have to do all the spadework yourself, and you are going to make some mistakes, and you know you're going to miss out on some of the best moments to enjoy the wine, unfortunately. But you know, as time goes on, you will get more and more of an instinct from just perusing the nose of the wine and so on. So every time I take a case of say 6 or 12 of one vintage, one chateau, I will always, within 4 to 6 months, absolute latest, I will open a bottle and I will consider the likely drinking windows, and they do go in and out. So you might find that 4 to 6 years is a superb young expression of the wine, then it might not do a great deal for the next 6 years, and then it might have a fantastic drinking window from 12 to 15 years, and then after that anything goes. I've drunk plenty of Bordeaux's of 20 years old that clearly had another 10 years of very fine, very fresh drinking, but I've also tasted, you know, ones that say 18 years, which are just, they're brown, they're dead basically. So there's no knowing. The number one tip I would say is don't buy into the hype, don't buy into what people recommend. Try and dig a little bit deeper, go around behind the scenes and find some chateaus that have absolute integrity, are totally doing what they do for quality and not for profit. They're not looking for the mass market and so on. And I do think this Chateau d'Alem absolutely ticks all of those boxes if you're into box ticking. And I'm about to open this now. It's a very exciting moment every time I open one of these, and I had 12, okay? I still have plenty. So we've got a beautiful dark scarlet capsule. Do be careful when you're opening these capsules, as some of them seem to be made of something very close to lead. This one's not particularly lead, but it's something very, very, you know, solid. And the fact of the matter is that that can go straight through your farm. I've had one go right inside my farm, almost up to the nail, and lots of pain for a great deal of time afterwards. So massively care when opening the capsule. And now I've got a waiter's friend here with a couple of points of leverage, so I'm just going to screw into the cork and just very, very gently prise it out. Shouldn't have any trouble at 2020. But again, do just be extra careful because these capsules will leave sharp little bits that are just itching to take your skin off. And it is very, very difficult as well to get a first leverage on these. But, you know, super sign of quality, a nice cork in a fantastic Bordeaux bottle. Ready? Kiss. So the cork's beautiful cork. It's got an imprint of the Chateau and Chateau d'Alem Fronsac 2020 bottled at the Chateau. This is the type of wine I am always looking for. It's not overpriced. Absolute integrity. It is what it says. It's not a negotiant wine. It's absolute integrity and care to detail. I'm going to pour that in. I'm just going to leave that about a quarter of a glass max. I've probably put just a little bit much in, but unbelievably beautiful fresh crimson, I would say very dark raspberry going on plum, dark red currant, but it's not into the brambles and damsons. It's still quite a, it's a dark pale red, if that makes any sense at all. So I'm just going to let that one aerate a little bit. I've just swirled it a little bit. It's in my biggest glasses, which take a can of Guinness, Dartington Crystal. I'm hoping one day to get to the point where I can actually create myself very fine drinking vessels made of almost transparent porcelain. That really will be something else. But those days are yet to come. And now, as a contrast, I've got the 2019 Cuvée Viva Chateau Gigault from Blaye, just along on the right bank again, Côte de Bordeaux. So these appellations, you know, contain massive value because they haven't got the hype of Pomerol and Saint-Emilion. But they are both of them, incredibly, they're both 100% Merlot. Right, and they give the greatest expression of Merlot in the world, because Merlot is one of those flaffy, pappy, sort of nothingy grapes. When it's served up from anywhere else in the world, apart from the right bank of Bordeaux, in my opinion, you might well differ, but that's my opinion. It can become, with, you know, absolute care and attention to detail, it can become perhaps the greatest grape in the world, but it starts life out as a pretty weedy specimen, to be fair. This one's 14% and it has a real legend. Again, something you can buy a case of 12 on Premier, put the money down a year in advance, and you can do that on the on Premier as offered by Leif Waits Wine. Other people do them as well, but I can't be sure that you'd be able to get these two, because each of the wine clubs does, you know, very specifically source wines themselves to offer their customers. So I mean, I highly recommend buying wine this way, and most of the great wines that I've been able to not only enjoy but time and again because I bought a case of 12 are my on Premier purchases. It doesn't always quite work that way, because I've bought some Rhone, which was absolutely superb in the first 5 years. It looked to me like it had the promise of doing a 10 or 12, but has since kind of died a bit of a death. I'm just taking my time opening it, because like I say, you can suffer a very nasty hand injury just taking these capsules off, and they are tricky. So Chateau Gigault, Blaye offers perhaps the best value in all of Bordeaux. The wines can be absolutely tremendous, and who's ever heard of Blaye or Fronsac, you know, and they are just down the road from Saint-Emilion. So now the wines of Saint-Emilion, and particularly Pomerol, are a very soft, often clay grown Merlot, and they generally don't have what it takes to stand the pace. So you're looking at, I would suggest, no longer than 9 years in bottle to really enjoy them at their best. 5 or 6 years would be about perfect. It's the left bank, like Montrose and Pouliac and Saint-Julien and Margaux. It's those wines that have the staying power for 50 years, okay? But you have to learn these things for yourself. So I'm just gently leveraging this cork out. Just take your time. Ready? It's a nice rainy day today. Mwah. Love that sound. Okay, so great sign of quality actually on a French bottle is there's no back label. Right, because if there's no back label, it quite possibly wasn't made for the British market. It's a French wine for the French. Again, lovely, lovely cork. These two have superb corks. Everything on the label is, you know, replayed on the cork. And the cork itself is just your absolute tip-top quality. So, these two are fantastic. You know, 2019 and 20, 14%, 14.5%. They really are where it's at. And, you know, I feel very pleased as a buyer to be able to access these wines. Now, this one actually is even lighter in colour, and it's coming out as quite translucent. I can still see the bottom of the glass for it. Just going to swirl it around a little bit. So after, you know, 5 or 6 years or however many years in bottle, a wine hits the oxygen and it aerates. And ideally you want to get a fair little bit of oxygen in, and that's the purpose of just standing and swirling the wine before you even nose it, okay? It just wants to come into contact with oxygen, otherwise it's not going to give up, you know, its best notes. It's very arguable as to whether or not you should decant these for an hour or so before drinking. Again, you've got to find that out for yourself. If you have got dinner guests, I mean, there's nothing more thrilling than the actual opening of the bottle. Okay, so I would recommend if you're going to have a really nice, say you've got a fantastic shank casserole or something, or you've got some venison, or, you know, you've got rib, whatever you've got, get your guests in. And an hour before you're going to serve the meal, do the opening so everyone can have the fun of doing the tasting and everything. And then you can decant the wine and it will be ready to serve with your roast meats. Or you might even just be having cheese and fruit. You know, these wines work fantastically. Do they go with fish? Of course they do. Do they go with chicken? Of course they do. Be fan absolutely top spot with turkey, right? Any kind of pork dish, you know, you can drink them with whatever you want. But so I've left them to just get a little bit acclimatized to the air, and now I'm going to give you the nose on the Chateau d'Ellen. So I've got very big lipped glasses, huge glasses, and these were actually designed by Tony Laithwaite's, and they were given to me free of charge by Tony Laithwaite's. Because, yeah, you cannot take too long, and it's a very special thing for your guests to arrive for, you know, looking forward to a fantastic repast, and to be able to just totally nosy in and mosey in and get into the wine, you know, sometime before the meal is going to be served is just fantastic. I mean, the looks on this one, and you can already see it's got a really, really good luxuriant texture to it, and the legs are performing beautifully. You know, there's a hell of a lot of seduction in that glass long before it gets anywhere near my lips. Wine is very sexy, unless you brought it down the garage, in which case it's, you know, it's not very sexy, it's more toolbox. Understanding Bordeaux by yourself, making your mistakes and paying for them, is one of the most rewarding things in this world. I'm just getting it up my nose. Don't forget you've got two nostrils. Sniff a little bit on the left, sniff a little bit on the right. Just like you might have one foot that's dominant, you might have one nostril that's dominant. The nose on this wine is so good, I actually want to linger. I don't even want to taste it just yet. I'm getting masses of tobacco leaf, like cedar bark, huge amounts of really rustic licorice, loads and loads of really spicy pepper. But there's a huge sort of red meat about it. It's going to be one of the most glorious wines, quite possibly, I've ever tasted, that one. And again, next year might not perform the same at all. You know, it's a massive risk. I tend to only open one or two bottles a year of wines of this quality because they should have the staying power. And I kind of don't want to overindulge, if you know what I mean, to keep something really, really special. You know, you look forward to it once every 6 months, say. I mean, that's not the same as sex, of course, but... Right, so we're going on to the nose here with the Chateau Gigot. Now, I'm getting a much more fruity nose here. Absolute ton of fruit. Not nearly so much of the sort of cedar wood and cigar. I can still smell a fair little bit of oak in here, which suggests either it's, you know, past its best or it hasn't anywhere near got near it, which is, you know, you cannot tell. And again, even with one Chateau, it's different vintages perform in a different way. That's the magic of it. You buy Coca-Cola, you get Coca-Cola. You buy a Chateau year after year after year, you get a world of tasting experience. And don't forget, you yourself change as the years go by, and what you want out of a wine will mature, you know. So I'm getting a little bit of brown orange notes at the edge here. We're talking 1 year older, but they are remarkable. They're very close together. The Chateau's, you know, on the right bank. And there's a year's difference. And of course, a year may not just be a linear year, it could be a very different vintage. So we could have a vintage that was all sleet and hail, we could have a vintage that was all sunshine. You just don't really know. I always had the impression that 2015 was a high tannic year, 2016 was a hugely fruity year, and this is over the whole world. 2017, 18 and 19 were really rounded with a smattering of fruit, but a lot of, you know, finely balanced tannins, some beautiful sort of drink me now wines. But I always had the idea that 2020 would be the blockbuster event, and so far nothing's proved me wrong. 2021 and 2022, pretty laid back, very, very nicely balanced, but not rock solid, you know, time spenders as such. Don't think I've tried anything later than that, to be fair. As yet. Yeah, so very, very different noses. Just going to give them once more over the nose. The reason why I'm taking the time is I want you to understand just how precious opening two bottles that are quite fairly similar, you know, is. And just take your time, for goodness sake. The meat will keep. I'm just roasting a chicken myself, actually. Yeah, now I smell the Dalem again. And I'm getting a little bit of wood mustiness, to be fair. So it's time to give them a whirl, okay, and then I'll tell you what I'm doing for the month of September, and you might like to get involved as well. It's top quality, okay? So I'm just going to take a deep breath, and I'm going to taste the Dalem. I'm going to allow the wine to coat the inside of my mouth without actually doing the mouthwash thing, and then I'm going to just release it back into my throat on a long, slow finish, and then I'll tell you what I'm getting. Then I will actually wash my mouth out with water, do the same thing with the Gigot, okay, and then I'll do it a second time because you get a totally different, you know, stance on the second time. Yes, I am taking the time, but you need to as well. You need to be buying much better wines, and you need to be, you know, cellaring them and savouring them like a seasoned pro, okay? It's one of the best things you can do in life, and it's never going to let you down. Yes, you will waste a few bottles, but you will gain in the quality of your own integral character. How good is that, eh? So this is the Dallow, very, very fresh looking. I'm getting a wine that's incredibly spicy. Massive burst of, almost tartness, but not sourness or sharpness, just very, very punching damson. Even though I said it doesn't look damson, there's all that, that tartness. And it's absolutely gobsmackingly, defyingly amazing. But what I'm getting from a first taste is, this wine isn't quite at its peak, okay? However, it might go in and out of a window, and it might sort of, for the next few years, it might not give me very much, and then it might mellow into something else, or it might be right now. I mean, it's a fantastic and, dynamic and really punching wine, and I mean, you can't go wrong with it. So it's 5 years old, okay? Just took a bit more there. I'm just going to rinse my mouth so that I can be completely, at one with the new wine. But very, very exciting wines. They're about, I don't know how much they cost me, somewhere between 18 and £24, that type of thing. And I did buy them before the prices went up. I would suggest that in Waitrose you'd have to pay at least £30 to get wines of this quality, and even then you're taking a big risk, because even in Waitrose, who are a bit more into Bordeaux, the chances of getting something worth drinking are fairly remote unless you're paying bigger money. And a lot of the wines are made to look, the label is made to look like a chateau, and it's not, it's just a cooperative negotiant wine of pretty low quality, to be honest. So I'm just taking a deep breath again. This is like playing a solo on the euphonium, tasting these wines. These are blockbusting wines of immense structure and quality. So this is a Chateau Gigard, and it's got two roses on the label, whereas the other one has a good picture of the chateau. Now, I'm getting a somewhat more seasoned wine. There's a bit of woodiness in there. One of the reasons why tasting these is so immense is they are fantastic wines, but you're also putting your own reputation and, wisdom on the line. You're saying, oh, I've spent all this money and time on these, and then, you've got to prove whether or not you've made a good decision. And I'll tell you what I'm getting. I'm getting an immense amount of tannin on the front of my top teeth and that part of my lip, which is unusual. Okay, I'm just going to have another taste of that one. I've had this one from at least two different vintages, and it really is a fantastic wine. I suspect, and again, I've not had enough of them and tried them long enough. I mean, I suspect it's more of a drink me now red, but there's a lot in there that says that there's, enough bite to stay the course for some time. And I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to keep at least two or three of them back for some considerable time, because that's my wine education. How are we doing with them? The trouble is that buying wine site is fairly costly in terms of money up front and so on, and it's really difficult in a time of rising costs to be able to put money aside for this. And considering that they're not necessarily drink me now wines, when even when they do finally arrive, you're not going to be able to drink them. So it's a massive investment of your available spending money. But I would prefer to invest in mines like this than to chip money onto a stock exchange that could explode at any moment. At least I've got something to drink at the end of it, and also something to sell if need be, or to barter. So I'm just going back to the Dalem. The Dalem, I love that massively tart damson. Right, it's so fresh. It's such a punch. It's fantastic. It really, really is. Well, definitely, one of the best red wines I've tasted this year. In fact, I've tasted so few that are more than just easy drinking. I can't actually remember. It's been, very, very few wines at all. I think I'm going to massively enjoy this. I'm just going to, drink it pretty slowly over the week, to be honest. These two are going to last over the week with various dinners. Might be the roast chicken, it might be a steak, I might get some pulled pork, whatever. It's all good to go, but it is fantastic to come back after a long day's work and to know that you've got a tip-top Bordeaux waiting for you, and it's one out of your own collection, and nobody else is drinking this in Kent. I doubt there's another person in Kent, and a great deal of Britain at the moment drinking these two wines at this moment, and that as well is pretty nice to know that. Pretty nice. So let's just try it. I mean, that Dalem, what can I say? It's a blockbusting fecker of a wine. It's a kick you in the teeth wine. It's a, totally propound the intensity of what you feel about life at this moment. You're not going to be the same person once you've sipped that. That is, you're going to live for at least another 150 years on that wine alone. And, the Gigot? I mean, the Gigot is like an art statement. It's a poetry in a, it's a poem in a bottle. The trouble is, the last one I've just tasted was a Nero d'Etioia organic wine from Puglia, but it's a very big cherry. Opulence, the sort of opera singer with the big cleavage type. And these two are much more sort of little fuddled, hidden away, all expenses paid secretary type wines, if we're talking about wine in terms of a personality, If we were talking about them in terms of a cloth, the Puglia would be, it would actually be a sort of faux velvet and very, very lovely and soft, but actually artificial. And the Gigot and the Château d'Alençon would be, the very finest of tapestries, really. And if we were talking about them in terms of music, then the Puglia is, it's an opera aria. And these two are much more of a Bach fugue that's only just come to light after hundreds of years. It's just being played for the first time. I can't recommend these two chateaus highly enough. Château Gigot, Blaye, Château d'Alençon, Fronsac. And you can get them yourself, Blaithwaite's on Promur. I don't get any money from Laithwaite's for mentioning it, but I do get some free glasses from time to time because they like me. Why wouldn't they like me? Everyone likes me. I like me. I like my wine. Livening up a wet weekend in a caravan near Dungeness. I'm finding the Dalem is really, kicking above. Oh, how can you say above its weight? But above my expectations of what it would taste like today, the Château Gigot is just a little bit more subdued than perhaps I was expecting. I was expecting big cherry, plum, and raspberry notes, and what I'm actually getting is I'm getting a little bit of a dryness. I'm getting the impression that it's in one of those insides of its drinking window. It's not the best year I could have opened it, and it's not performing particularly well as a blend somehow. It's very subdued. There's definitely pencil shavings in there. Fruit wise, I would say there's mostly raspberry, to be honest. I mean, there is a lot of, interlayered spice and leather, but only on very, very, very minimalistic terms. It's vastly enjoyable and it's a contemplative wine, but it's not throwing enormous passion at me, okay? Whereas the Chateau d'Alain, the Chateau d'Alain is kind of like a feisty first wife clawing at my neck, you know? Does that make any sense? You know, the Gigolle is coming more across as the housekeeper. She just does her job and buggers off downstairs and puts her feet up, you know? Snores a bit. The feisty first wife is not only trying to, hold the conversation, she's expecting me to perform later in the evening, feckin' hell. Right, so going on to my little, task of the month is I'm picking the grapes. I'm picking Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier in a glorious and incredibly beautiful vineyard in the south of England, in Kent. And the vineyards are actually embodied inside a mature oak forest. And the views, because it's at the top of the Weald, across the Romney Marsh and out to Dungeness and the French coastline even, it is a moment when you're standing at the top of the vineyard under the oak trees. It's a moment to refresh your soul and to remind you why you're on this soil. You know, it is one of those moments, it's poetical in its dimensions, and yet no words spring to you because it gets into the very, very heart of what you were generations before you even were thought of, and you just think, this is me, here I am. And generations of me have made this possible, because this vineyard was planted 21 years ago. Okay, so it's pretty new, but it's definitely producing some pretty nice fruit. There's some very oddities in the vineyard, but we do get some really, hands-on, big, glorious bunches of black grapes. And it's all laid out very, very nicely. I obviously could improve on the whole thing, but it's a joy to work there, and it's grueling. You have to have maximum physical endurance. You have to have vision, to be honest. If you're just standing there saying, oh, my back hurts and I'm only being paid minimum wage, no, you're taking up 1/12 of your year. That's what it is. It's not money. It's a 1/12 of your year is going into, making you one heck of a fit individual who contributes inside of the wine industry worldwide. And this is Gusbourne Sparkling Wine of Kent, beloved of the Cowdray Park polo playing set. When we've gruelled our way through the harvest, which will take many days yet, we'll have the opportunity to buy the wine half price. Also, I will have a total process tour, so I get to find out what happens to the grapes after we've picked them, and they go to press, and then they'll go into stainless steel tanks and so on. And it's a traditional champagne method of fermentation in the bottle. Very, very exciting and very expensive process. So, you know, do your research, find out all about it. By goodness, why not? Why wouldn't you? But we've yet to start on the Chardonnay. We're picking the earliest they have done, I think, for years, at the beginning of September. The weather is very debatable. You know, you get absolutely everything thrown at you in just half an hour, from Arctic winter conditions to hot summer, with rain in between and a thunderstorm. Get a couple of thunderstorms on Friday. All you can do is the best that you can do. But it's having the vision of doing all that you can in the harvest, buying the wine at half price. And the glory of it is the party, the great pickers party at the end of the vintage. That is a human connection and teamwork unparalleled. You know, you will never have known anything like it in your life. I highly recommend, if you like your wine, get involved at some level with winemaking, wine tasting, understanding the process. You know, even invest in wine bonds, whatever it takes, build your own cellar. But just make wine a really big, deep, integral part of you and your life. And your character will build the greater from it, because you look at the bottles in your cellar and you'll think, I want to be alive in so many years' time to drink that wine. Yeah? And that will start to build into your subliminal's plan of just where your life is going to go, because it's not going to go anywhere too dangerous, right? I'm just going to go a ching. I'm going to taste them both again. Thank you very much for looking in. I know I've taken the time, but I'm trying to tell you, wine does take time. That's the beauty of it. What else have you got to do that's so special you couldn't just take your time with a couple of Bordeaux's or a whole month or so picking grapes? I'll tell you what, it's tough. Get yourself some good footwear, and it might be an idea to have some kind of waterproof. The redness and the brightness and the freshness of the Chateau de Lhem and the tartness of it, it's just an absolute joy. I'll tell you what, neither of them massively come across with that earthiness that's so Bordeaux, but it's definitely there in spadefuls in the foundations of this wine. It's just not hitting me, you know, right front of palate, that's all. That is a wine kings and emperors would be proud to drink. And I know that I'm drinking some of the best wine in the world at this moment. And I want you to be able to say that of yourself as well. Now, the Gigolle is looking a little bit browner. So, you know, it's starting to mature a little bit more. These are two incredible examples of what Merlot can produce at the top of its ability. But so much Merlot is just sort of wine Tetra Pak quality, and you're never going to understand the grape unless you hit the right bank of Bordeaux. It's the one thing Bordeaux does really well, apart from the other thing that it does really well, which is Cabernet Sauvignon. And you'll also find grape varietals like Petit Verdot, Malbec, but I'll let you find that one out for yourself. Never, never be afraid to make mistakes in wine. I've bought some Pomerols, some of which are too old, but I had to find that out for myself. I had to realise that white banks seldom have the staying power of the left banks. Do all the research you can on Bordeaux. Go to Bordeaux and Saint-Emilion if you can. Travel up the Gironde. Have a look at the wine cooperatives. Don't forget Entre-deux-Mer. Have a look at Graves. See if you can at least drive past some of the really great chateaus like Margaux. And never be afraid to try the little chateaus in the same vicinity, because remember, they are growing the same grapes on the same soil. So the chances are pretty high that you will get a good wine. It's just that they may not have the investment and the facility to you know, mature the wine in quite the same way, but it's definitely worth it. I think it's beautiful to come into something like wine on the lowest platform where you've got to work your way up, you know. But one of the great things you can do is to buy wine, cases of 12 on Pommard, and sell them yourself, because you might just hit some of the top heights in enjoying Bordeaux that somebody else has paid £4,000 to £16,000 a bottle, and you're actually getting something much nicer for less than 40 quid a bottle, even with the customs and excise. Okay, now I think everyone should have a task that they set themselves for life, which gives them a reason to live a lot longer. Because if you set your subliminal the task of, I think I need to live a lot longer, because your subliminal will roll it out for you. If you've got your own wine cellar, you will live a lot longer than the person who has no wine cellar. That's a fact. Don't even try to prove me wrong, okay? That is a fact. Now, what I want to do is I want to say to myself, these two are beautiful wines and I have massive admiration for these. These are goddesses in the pantheon of wine tasting, okay? But there's only one thing that I don't like about them, and that is that I'm drinking someone else's soil. You've got soil. You've got a root, which is an old vine that's being used as a stock root. And you will have some kind of clone growing onto that. And that will be trained on wires to create an aisle of vines. There's a lot of discipline in the structure. And if the sunshine and the wind and the rain are all there in good measure, and the soil is the right kind for the grape varietal, you will get a good grape, and a good grape can, with discipline and control and expertise and knowledge and a great deal of patience and imagination, it can become a great wine. I want to drink wine which expresses my soul, and I want to drink that wine from my soil. I want, in Kent, to grow and expand the wine industry so that we are creating some of the best wines in the world that can easily compete with Bordeaux. But we do have one lack. We lack cellars and we lack barrique. And we are going to have to put a lot of time and a lot of determination, a lot of vision, and a lot of money into experimenting. But we have one thing on our side, and that is that in the last 40 years we've gone from primarily growing German grape varietals to primarily growing the grape varietals of Champagne. And who knows what we can do in the future, and I will even try grape growing under glass. I don't care what anyone says, I will do what I do because I want to, because I have great vision for the future of the, I'm going to say, English wine industry. And the only reason I've said that is there's this thing called British wine. Never, never buy anything that says British wine on the bottle. Never do that. You could buy a paint stripper, and it probably won't cost you much more, but you'd be better off with that. But I will come out with a term eventually that's got some kind of respectability about it. Who knows how far north we can grow vines? We don't know yet. One of the best ways to understand wine in Britain is to look at what the Romans did. Did anyone before the Romans grow vines here? We don't really know, but we can find out if we make the effort, okay? What is absolutely certain is that long, long before the Romans hit these shores, the Phoenicians were trading with us, particularly the Curnows on the toe of Britain, which is Cornwall. And for thousands of years before the Romans, Cornwall was a great centre of trade for the various metals which were mined there. One of my friends moved from Kent, Mid Kent, and she bought a house in Kurnow, right on the toe. And what she failed to realise was that the house was built on top of an exceedingly ancient, thousands of years old mine shaft. And so the house suffered extreme subsistence. It just collapsed basically. So she bought it for about £350,000. She sold it for £50,000 to a speculator. And she had to get an insurance company to cough up. I think they coughed up £400,000 in the end. She then inherited some money from the sale of her mother's house. And now she lives a little bit further out, more towards the Lizard. She loves Cornwall and she enjoys being there very much. And she has quite a nice wine cellar, but nothing like mine. She doesn't buy cases of 12, you know. She just has her favourites like a Rioja and an Apicemento, that type of thing. She has good guest wines, but she's not a wino by any means at all. But she found to her, you know, astonishment that Cornwall is a land of very ancient trade and industry. And so it's one of my prospective enjoyments is to discover the ancient Iron Age industries of this country and to see what we can reinstate and create a brand new world-beating wine industry. It's 40 years since Carr Taylor of Sussex in the 1066 area near Seddlescombe created the first sparkling wine in England, as far as I know, 40 years. That vineyard is now up for sale because the company apparently has gone bankrupt. They say they went bankrupt because of taxation. The locals know different. They lost their vision. They had no marketing clout. They didn't forge ahead in a new world. That's why they went bankrupt, because they were a lousy set of pirates at the end of the day. And that vineyard is up for sale, worth looking into. There's another one up for sale at Dover, £600,000. It's a giveaway, it's a steal. You could get 12 interested business people together, £50,000 each, a little bit more for, you know, modernising the place. It can be done. And it can be done with very little, if any, money. We're going to put Britain, England particularly, on the map as the best wine country in the world, and that's going to overtake even Bordeaux. And that's my vision. What's yours? Have you got a wine cellar? Do you go out to vineyards? Do you invest in British wine, English wine, Celtic wine? How passionate are you about wine? How passionate are you about long life? How passionate are you about being alive? How passionate are you about serving a fantastic meal with the best wines for your guests and making it exciting? You want to up the tenor. Everyone can sink to the level of innuendos. Everyone can. But imagine getting passionately excited about the wines that you're serving with a really good meal. That's a good evening. And I wish you a good evening. Because I'm well suited here. I've got roast chicken. I've got two fantastic Bordeaux. And tomorrow morning, I'll be out at 7:30 picking the finest grapes in Kent with the finest views in Kent. Don't just settle for, strive ahead, forge not only your destiny, but the destiny of a completely new industry that takes over and wipes the board with everyone. Thank you for listening in. Have a fantastic day. Have a fantastic week. And get yourself a wine cellar, for feck's sake.